Support for KNKX comes from WSECU, a community credit union with 21 branches and a full suite of digital services. WSECU supports 9 regional farmers markets across Washington State and invites listeners to enjoy the bounty of summer at their local market. More information at WSECU.org.
Let me set the scene for you. You're in a quiet neighborhood near the beach at Dash Point, which is just north of Tacoma, and the sun is setting. It's just about to kiss the horizon, and then out comes 81-year-old Don Britton onto his porch. Britton does this every night, exactly at dusk. He's been doing it for like 8 years. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and this haunting sunset ritual is kicking off our show, where our theme is Lend Me Your Ears. So Britton says playing taps every night occurred to him when he saw a 9/11 tribute, and he wanted to find his own way to honor the military service members.
These folks are out there giving their life for us, so we can be here, be safe. And I thought, that by itself, for me, is inspiration enough for me to go out, and if I can play and contribute to what they're doing, that's enough for me.
Don was never in the military himself. He had a childhood bout of polio that kept him from serving. But he says these clockwork performances have touched people, and he gets letters from service members, people as far away as Afghanistan. When he started doing this in 2010, he wasn't really sure he was going to keep it up for this long, but he says his wife really pushed him.
I lost my wife a few years ago, and she was supportive of it from day one, and at times I'd get a little lazy and say, I don't think I'm going to go out here and play tonight or something, and she'd say, you get your butt out there and you go play. She was tough. She was tough. To be able to kind of bury myself in the music helped me get past the loss, I think. Just helped me get past that.
So I don't know how you'd feel about your neighbor blowing a trumpet every night at dusk, but Britton's neighbors seem to love it. Every concert ends in applause.
I came a little bit of a minor hero here. Not intentionally, but because they seem to enjoy it. It's almost embarrassing a little bit to me that I've gotten so much positive feedback and so many accolades. That was my intent. I just thought, if I can come out here and do this, it makes me feel good. It's simplistic. It's not complicated.
So now that we have your ears, here is what Gordon Hempton is listening to.
So the first thing is when I get on location, and if it proves to be truly a quiet place where nature is at its most natural, I just listen. And that, to me, means take all the sounds in with equal value. I don't listen for anything.
Gordon Hempton is one of the country's foremost nature recordists, meaning he goes out into natural places and records the sounds, and then his recordings get used in movies and music and TV documentaries. He lives on the Kitsap Peninsula, and the guy is not just a nature lover. He is a connoisseur of the sounds of nature.
I remember standing there in the Belize forest, the rainforest down there, just listening to what I might hear, and then this bird comes along. And it's like, oh my God, that can really be a bird and sound so musical. It sounds like music. Why? I mean, it doesn't sing for our benefit, and that really uncovers that mysterious link of this is our home planet, we evolved here. And I like spending that time in that situation. So as I listen to myself sort of explain what it is that I'm excited about, yeah, this is my worship. When I push record, I feel like I'm a true listener.
The sounds of the natural world were sacred to him, and he's also their defender. He is an activist against noise pollution. But then something happened to Gordon Hempton one spring day in 2011.
I woke up, and I thought, well, this is kind of funny. It's April. and the sun is shining, the birds should be singing. And I was reminded of Rachel Carson's Silent Spring. And I thought, well, is it happening in our neighborhood? Something the matter with the birds? So I leaned over to now my wife, then my partner, Kate, and I said, Kate, do you hear a bird song? And she goes, yes.
The sound tracker was losing his hearing. So he went to doctors, he went to specialists to try and get a diagnosis, and no one could come up with a good explanation for why his hearing was deserting him. And so he found himself on the clock. He was basically in a race to finish his life's work. His life's work is this giant multi-volume collection of nature recordings called Quiet Planet, and he was trying to get it done before he went completely deaf. He was afraid he wouldn't be able to, and he was even more afraid of losing human connections.
Well, how bad is this going to get? Already this puts me out of work, but am I going to lose touch entirely? And that's really my greatest fear, is that I'll lose touch with my family, loved ones around me, my sense of community. So much comes through our ears and into our being that we take for granted while we're being distracted by what we're looking at. You begin to get edgy, irritable. Just something as simple as having a conversation with a person became as special as what a dessert would be. And those moments in my day did disappear. Everything became a grind.
But then Hempton began to hear from other people who had lost their hearing, and he found an unexpected culprit. Could it be that the thing that had robbed the sound tracker of his hearing was allergies?
Was that something you were expecting?
Not at all. It's like allergies. I know I've had a few allergies in the past, but we're talking itchy eyes, stuffy nose. Well, as it turns out, allergies can affect the inner ears just as much as they affect any other part of the body. And so I went to an allergist at the end of a full day of testing. Well, a big concern was that I was allergic to environmental substances like pollens and molds. I was allergic to the outdoor Northwest. But the therapy that I am now doing is getting my immune system back into balance by limiting the foods I'm sensitive to, taking these clear drops of antigens below my tongue. And I now have 80% recovered in my right ear. I can hear birds. I can hear insects. I can hear many of the things that even the best ears hear. My left ear, however, is still only at 25%. The way I look at it now is my glass is half full. Now that my hearing is recovering, I have a deep appreciation for what it means not just to hear, but what it means to listen.
When you were unsure whether your hearing was going to come back, I mean, what was important for you to do while you still had some of your hearing left?
I had been working on my life's achievement, hopefully, in the future. This is Quiet Planet. Quiet Planet is where I'm bringing over 30 years of soundtracking around the globe into an organized library for industry. So that I wanted to get together. But honestly, most of my day was spent doing this. Just rubbing my fingers together and giving myself a hearing test on my right ear and on my left ear. And even now, I can do that. And some simple tests like that, I can measure the improvement that I'm making. So now let me describe to you what I hear when I do this. On my right ear, oh, it's really nice. I like that a lot because it shows that there's some grip to my fingers. It skids along, and there's not only the g-g-g-g-g, but there's nice bright going along with it. That's like epic. To me, that's like totally epic.
What's epic about it? Just the fact that you can hear the subtleties?
Oh, just that I can hear it at all. The epic thing is that I have detail back in my life. Before that, I wouldn't even be able to hear anything but an indicator sound that I knew something was happening, but what was happening, I couldn't tell. And on my left side, the only thing that I could, I wouldn't be able to hear anything on my left side when I rubbed my fingers together. The only thing I'd be able to hear is if I tapped my head. Well, now on my left side, I really like this because I told you earlier that I only have 25% recovery in my left ear, but I don't believe that that's true right now, because I'm also getting a little gripping. See, these are the baby steps towards progress that I make that really make my day and get me excited. Oh, it's like wonderful. I'm encouraged. I think they'll come back. Yeah, I think they'll come back. So I'm going to keep up everything I'm doing and hang in there. It's been 2.5 years so far in the recovery process. And I thought I might have 2 more years, but based on what I'm hearing today, I'll give it possibly within 2015, I'll be 100%. And that's when you'll see me buying some tickets online to go to the next great place to record.
Gordon Hempton, the sound tracker, lives on the Kitsap Peninsula, and he continues to work on his magnum opus, Quiet Planet. You're listening to Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and our theme today is Lend Me Your Ears. And this next story is about a sense of hearing, but also a sense of community. What you're hearing right now is from the Sorrento Hotel on First Hill in Seattle. And the Sorrento, if you haven't seen it, it's this 7-story tall, ornate, Italian Renaissance-style hotel. It opened in 1909. 88.5's Ed Ronco went there for something called a silent reading party. And he's here now to tell us more about it. Hey, Ed.
Hello, Gabriel.
So we're hearing sound from inside the fireside room at the Sorrento. What is that space like?
All right. It's this big hexagonal room right off the lobby. There's dark wood paneling on the walls, big column right in the middle of the room, and the lights are subdued. There's a baby grand piano and a giant fireplace that's kind of outlined in green tile.
Oh, sounds cozy.
It is.
All right, so what's going on right now?
It's early evening. The room is filling up with people. Some of them have books. Some of them have Kindles or tablets. And then, right at 6, without any prompting, the room falls absolutely silent.
Really?
Okay, that might be a little too silent. Hold on. There. That's about right. You can still hear some background noise as people get drinks, and there's, you know, waitstaff circulating throughout the room, but the conversations have stopped. The books are opened, eventually a piano player shows up and adds some live music. Every seat is taken, people are on the floor, and all of them are reading in silence.
Why are you doing this?
All right, for that answer, let's turn to Christopher Frizzell. He's the editor-in-chief of The Stranger and one of the founders of the Silent Reading Party. He talks a little bit about how it got started and what exactly is going on right now.
It came from a couple Stranger critics 10 years ago, realizing at the end of a workday, oh, we all have to go home and read. I need to go home because I'm reviewing this book. And we went to the grocery store and bought figs and cheese and whiskey and chocolate and had a great time sitting around, mostly not talking to each other, but occasionally talking to each other. I really wanted to read at bars and have a drink and read, but a lot of bars aren't lit for reading. And a lot of the bars that are, the people who are there get insulted if you're sitting there reading. I've had so many interactions in bars where people say things like, don't you know you're in a bar? Or must be a really good book. Or, you know, they get kind of weirdly offended or as if you're trying to prove that you know how to read. Or I don't know why they get so offended, but there's a strange thing where it's a violation of the social code if you're in a bar where everybody's socializing for you to be sitting at the bar reading. And I really wanted that opposite to be true. What scenario would mean everybody in the bar gets to read?
Did you think when you said, let's give this a try, people would actually show up to this?
No, I really thought it was a silly idea born of my own social interactions, and to this day it surprises me the number of people that show up.
What's social about reading for you when you're not actually reading to other people or the same thing as other people?
It's not that it's social, it's more like I don't want to be alone. It's more like I want to read, and I also want to combat the loneliness of reading. And I feel like if people hang out together and read together, and occasionally, you know, someone will lean over and say, you got to read this paragraph. Or they'll start cracking up and you'll take an interest because you just can't help it. Occasionally people pass notes, which I strongly encourage. I think it's really adorable. And people talk afterward. I mean, people, when you're not allowed to make small talk, all you want to do is make small talk. It's so strange. It's really funny to watch these people like repressing their desire to speak up. And then 8 o'clock comes and they're like, oh my God, okay, so I just read this thing. And it's great. They're actually excited to talk to people in a room where they might not be excited otherwise. It's a city thing. It's a literary thing. It's a social thing. It's a bar thing. They have art that changes in this room, so it's kind of an art thing too. There's a lot about it that's still beyond my ability to grasp. I think the first couple years it was rare that it was really full. It would be full every other time or every three times. Now it's pretty consistently always full and sometimes way too full, but it's not empty like it used to be.
What has made it last?
I don't know. Here's the surprise. Yeah. The surprise is I'm sitting in a room with 80 people. There's five strangers to a couch. There's no room. There are people sitting on the floor because they want to be in this room, even though nothing's going to happen. They can just go home and sit in a chair and read, but they want to be part of this group thing. They just want to be part of a social fabric, and yet they also want to get some reading done. They're a person who's got a book that they've been meaning to get to, or a book they're really wrapped up in. And what's surprising to me is the number of people who want to sit on the floor. That's how excited they are to be in the room, even though literally nothing's going to happen.
It sounds a little like the first scene in a romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
People make eyes across the room at each other. I mean,
God, I hope so. Yeah, I hope that's happened.
Yeah.
It's got to happen soon. I mean, we've been doing this for 5 years, and there is definitely a flirtatious vibe, I think. Especially, there's lots of young people, lots of heterosexual people. I wish there were more gay people, personally. And it's there's something sexy about it. Being all together, everybody reading in their books and sort of unavailable mentally, there's something that draws you toward a person who's reading. And I really like that vibe.
Did more people come, say, in 2008 because the economy crashed and it was something free to do? Mm. Or, I mean, I just wonder if, like, world events or local events shape who shows up.
That's so funny. I don't think so. I mean, I think the more time has gone by, the more people come. I think that's all it is. For a while, we had special guests, which was also sort of an inside joke because the special guests didn't say anything or do anything. They just literally sat there and read whatever they felt like, and then they went home. Really, what calls attention to it is word of mouth and how unusual it is. And I think there is a deep-seated desire in the culture to reconnect with literature. And there are very few opportunities to be encouraged to.
We're such a tech-heavy culture. We're such a on-the-go, it feels like, you know, culture. Sitting around in silence, reading something that's ink and paper, that would be so popular is, I think, very surprising.
It's bizarre. It's wonderful.
Is it rude to ask what somebody's reading at one of these things?
I hope not. I think that's the only way to actually start the conversation.
What are you reading?
I'm reading The Waves by Virginia Woolf. I like it, although I don't like it as much as I liked To the Lighthouse, which I read about a month ago. And I read it twice. It was so good. And to this day, I walk down the street and think about that book and just start bawling.
That was Christopher Frizzell, editor of The Stranger in print and co-founder of Seattle's Silent Reading Party. He spoke with 88.5's Ed Ronco. The Silent Reading Party happens the first Wednesday of every month. It starts at 6 p.m., but if you want to sit on actual furniture, you should get there early. This is Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer. Our theme today is Lend Me Your Ears. And now we have a story about what it's like to listen back to some of your darker moments. Shannon Perry is the frontwoman for the Seattle band Gazebos and a well-known tattoo artist. 6 years ago, she realized she had an addiction to Adderall, and it was getting out of control. So she went to rehab. There, Shannon found that writing stories and music helped her make it through. So after rehab, she went back and listened to these haunting recordings she'd made, and she sat down to talk about them with contributor Arwen Nix.
I flushed my glasses down the toilet in rehab, oh rehab, If there's anything to be felt, then I'll feel it.
To start, tell me your name.
My name's Shannon Perry.
Why in the name of seven mad gods who rule the sea was I allowed to come thus far and contemplate sand and tree?
Where were you when you recorded these?
When I recorded these, I was in a rehab called the Plymouth House in the mountains of New Hampshire.
Rain in New Hampshire.
What had you gotten sober from?
First and foremost, I had started taking Adderall to an excessive degree. I was starting to just take it all the time and maybe stay up all night. Or if you're that hopped up on Adderall, you at the end of the day, you kind of need to drink to just bring yourself back down. And so then I had started drinking heavily, like starting around like 4 or 5 p.m.
Freedom is no place if you are stuck in your head.
I don't know how deep you want, I should get right off the bat, but I was like hallucinating and having paranoia and hearing voices and stuff.
Hello there, fear. Hello there, Batman. What's up?
Like, as soon as I started seeing things, I was like, that's what insane people do. Does that mean I'm crazy? And then I went and looked online at, like, symptoms of Adderall overdose, and I had all of them.
Aggression. Anxiety. Panic.
Hello,
depression.
Saturday
blurry vision.
Forever.
Disorientation. Hallucinations. Rapid breathing.
I would tell myself as I'm walking and I think a demon's following me, if I turn around and look to see if it's there, am I crazy? But if I ask myself that question, do I negate the craziness? Because I've already acknowledged that looking could mean that I'm crazy. So is that awareness enough to make me not crazy? And then I look behind me.
A human is meant to be green. Imagined as a screen.
I stopped taking it and went from probably what was close to like 80 or 90 milligrams a day to nothing. It's the worst. It's the worst thing I've ever quit in my life, including cigarettes and like alcohol and everything. It was like ultimate depression, just sleep. All you can do is sleep, like can't even get dressed, can't even just eat and sleep, which is probably healthy because I think I weighed like not much more than 100 pounds at the time because I was taking so much Adderall.
Joy must be subtle or pain will run deep. The pendulum swings, it's your choice how steep.
Why are you whispering on so many of these?
I was sharing a room with a meth head and a bath salts woman. So she was the only bath salts person there. She was amazing. I mean, amazingly paranoid.
No reflection, you won't see a face. Where am I then? You'll ask nobody there.
Anybody could have walked in at any given moment, so I had to be sure that I didn't want to get caught being weird because I was often like in the fetal position on the floor, just like singing into the side of my bed.
Moon river, wider than mile.
Because I didn't want anyone to hear it. I mean, I still do that exact kind of music writing now with my apartment. I'm just like, don't want my neighbors to hear.
Oh, dream maker. You heartbreaker.
How did you have a phone to record these things on in rehab?
I didn't have a phone. When I didn't know that we could have like an iPod or anything to like listen to music on. And then Fake Dad, who is my sponsor, I call him Fake Dad, he had brought me a little like really crappy little MP3 player, but then I found out you could record on it. I was like, oh, well, this experience I'm having is so crazy and I feel so alone and so scared. It was like the thing I could do to stay sane is make something.
Sometimes I think that I'm over you. Sometimes I think about what to do or how long I have to wait to be with you, assuming you maybe feel the way that I do too. Sometimes I think that I'm over you. Sometimes I think.
When did you find these recordings?
When a friend of mine was actually going to the same rehab, I was digging through looking for an MP3 player to give him. When I was going through it, I found all these recordings, and I, of course, took them off because I was like, there's no way I'm going to let him listen to these. But then I started listening to them, and I was sort of like, oh my God, it's like a real window into the hardest, most terrifying moment of my life. It was terrifying to listen to. It still is terrifying to listen to.
It is a miserable life to be always uncomfortable with me. It is a miserable life to be always.
So when you hear those things, this like this time machine that you have access to Shannon from 6 or 7 years ago, like, what do you think of her?
I was insecure. I was wanting to hang out with the people I considered to be the cool kids. Like wanted to be like more punk. So I think I was always trying to be brave. And I think choosing to go to rehab was me trying to be brave, and me trying to confront my own fears and emotions was me trying to be brave. And I'm glad that I did it because I don't feel such a necessity to do it all the time now, or at least I've like come to terms with some of those feelings, but I forget the question.
Shan, yeah? Be honest. Okay. Shan, yeah? Be brave. Okay.
Shan. Go home and hide. Bury me deep.
Work hard.
I don't want to survive. Okay. Shame. Shan. Go home and hide.
Yeah.
Bury me deep. I don't want to survive. Go home and hide. Bury me deep. Yeah. I don't want to survive. Go and hide. Bury me deep. I don't
be
want
humble.
To survive.
Okay. Shan. Yeah? Take care of your responsibilities. Okay. Shan. Yeah. Okay.
That story came to us from sound effect contributor Arwen Nix. You can find links to Shannon Perry's art and music at our website, knkxsoundeffect.org. You're listening to Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today our theme is Lend Me Your Ears. And now we're going to give a listen to one of the most chilling moments in a person's life. For this, we head up to Anacortes, Washington. The little coastal town has a vibrant and tight-knit independent music scene, and Carl Blau has long been close to the center of it. He's put out more than 30 albums over the last couple of decades. His latest project is actually a place, an all-ages music venue that grew into an online radio station called the Anacortes Music Channel. It was housed in a beautiful old downtown brick building.
The thing that's beautiful about this space is the tall ceilings. It's got almost 17-foot ceilings, and so it feels just really big.
The Anacortes Music Channel became a focal point for local musicians and fans in this little town long known more for its industrial past. And for Carl, it became a lifeline. But one night, all that changed.
On Tuesday the 8th of December, the night began with a Ben Starner piano performance, which was beautiful. I was here for the first hour of it. And we were airing this on the Anacortes Music Channel. And the place was just decked out. I mean, it was so ornate and beautiful. Jacques Moreret, who's a neighbor of the place, and he's this amazing artist, and had installed this Where the Wild Things Are-esque forest of plastic trees and silk flowers and Indonesian masks. And it was packed full of these beautiful trees, and we'd been doing these performances kind of in a forest. It was really fun. During the Ben Starner concert, I left to go do dishes and kind of clean up home like I do, and then I was like, okay, I'm going to come back, you know, as soon as the concert's over. Ben would perform, and then he would just leave and lock the place.
Doug Cassidy, I'm from Anacortes. So I stayed home that night, and I was listening to Ben play on the live stream, and just going about my business, doing this and that at home, and I start to hear what sounds to me like raindrops. At first, I thought that Carl had brought a microphone outside and was pointing it at a bucket of water or something like that. And
was that something he would do?
Yeah, and everyone I've told the story to at this point, they say, "Oh, well, yeah, of course, that's Carl would do that, sure." And so, you know, after a couple minutes of this, I started getting a weird feeling about it, and the drops started getting louder and louder, and I started thinking that they didn't really sound like raindrops anymore. Now they started to sound like something popping. It wasn't really like a campfire, because it was just more like pop, 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 pop.
You know, driving up on the scene, I just immediately knew something was horribly wrong, because the glass was black, couldn't see into the room at all. Usually you can see, at least see in, and it was just this total other feeling walking up to it, like it was a different dimension. And it took me a couple moments to just suddenly realize the reality that it was actually full of smoke. When I came into the room, you know, this plastic forest was melted, and the place was just thick with black smoke. I don't remember exactly the smell, just a really plasticky smell, and my inside of my nose was just caked.
Right about the time where I started thinking something was wrong down there, I hear the door open, and I hear Carl shout something as he comes in the door and into the flaming building.
It was really horrific to watch this kind of paradise of my mind be just engulfed and feel so helpless. My instinct was to try to tackle the fire, which was in the back corner there. And it was, I could see the carpet was really a main source of the flames. And I attempted to drag the carpet out, which the piano was on top of, and in some kind of Herculean moment, I pulled the carpet so hard the piano actually fell back. Onto the microphones that were recording. One of them cut out, I guess, and then one of them kept broadcasting the situation. And then I was like coughing, and I realized that there was just nothing I could do. And also realized I did not have my cell phone with me. One of the strange, rare moments that I decided not to, you know, have a cell phone with me. And there's no one around down here. It's dead.
You know, I had the phone in my hand kind of already at that point. And so I called 911 then, and then headed down here.
Then I realized at that moment that Rick and Bev are upstairs, and you know, and then that suddenly occurred to me that I don't know how fast this can go up. Then next thing I was like, oh my God, I gotta get those guys out, and I ended up smashing the window with my elbow and breaking into their apartment and screaming as I'm running up the stairs, and then I couldn't do really much else but just kind of stand outside and kind of freak out and just wonder why it's taking so long for the fire department to show up when it was probably like 2 minutes or something. I don't know how long.
What was it like to hear, overhear this very scary moment for your friend on the internet?
Well, it was just the feeling of knowing something was wrong and then having it confirmed. That was the scary part, was that at first I thought it was Carl messing around, and then it turns out to be our fun all-ages space getting burned down. And just right at the moment when Carl walked in and shouted something, I was just really kind of devastated for our scene, because, you know, we had a great thing going for almost a year of really awesome shows and jams, and, you know, it was heartbreaking.
The hardest thing for me is that I lost 20 years of magnetic tapes that I'd been working on things for the years. I mean, just hundreds of tapes. It was a real blow to me. Like, it was depressing, of course. And I thought, well, I can just keep feeling depressed, or I can, you know, I have spent a year working on other people's things, using all my extra energy to float this space. So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna take all of these ideas, you know, that are in my phone or whatever, and just start working them out. And so I've been doing that, yeah, and I'm like 10 songs deep into that. The process has really been to mine emotions of loss, and but the hope is kind of pulling me through creating these songs, the hope that was sort of instilled by the community and the support. I don't know, I didn't see this coming, that it would be such a rally. You know, there were a lot of Seattle and Northwest support, and friends and supporters in Anacortes too raised, I don't know, like $25,000 or something for my loss, which, yeah, that's pretty incredible. I listened back to that footage one time late at night as a kind of a self-dare. I was like, can you do it? And I probably shouldn't have done it right before bed, because it was... Yeah, I don't probably never want to do that again, at least not for the whole thing. It really, it got under my skin. It took me back when I saw this paradise of a room just black with smoke. I think something just flipped inside of me that yeah, when I listened back to the tapes, I felt like I still was holding on to it. Like I haven't really dealt with it. I think now it would be a little easier. I think I've been processing enough with writing music and thinking about it and talking to people about it and stuff, that it's probably easier now.
That was Anacortes musician Carl Blow and his friend Doug Cassidy. Their story was produced by Ali Ferguson. You're listening to Sound Effect from 88.5. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and our theme today is Lend Me Your Ears. So I would like you to try and picture this landscape. You're about halfway between Olympia and Aberdeen, and it's a moonlit night. And rising up against low hills are these two ghostly profiles. It's the telltale gray shapes of nuclear cooling towers, abandoned for decades. So there's a chain link fence that somebody has pulled up, and you kind of shimmy underneath that, and you make your way to this kind of portal into the derelict tunnels beneath Washington's mothballed nuclear power plant. Now, at first you got to climb up over this dirt mound in front of the entrance, and then you slide on your belly down into the darkness. It's black and wet and creepy, but you go down there with no light, no flashlight, nothing, because you're not really planning to use your eyes. You are using your ears. That's what phonographer Christopher De Laurenti did to make his 44-minute recording To the Cooling Tower, Satsop. I caught up with him and I asked him how he got so interested in listening.
My late father, God rest his soul, once said, quote, "There is no middle class in the music business." And I saw this up close, and he spent so much time hustling for gigs and doing odd musical jobs in places that he called filthy saloons. So I thought, wow, I don't really want to be a part of that because it's such a hard life. But here I am. Somehow I got lured into it. And I was lured into it through a love of sound and listening and music technology.
Tell me one of the transformative experiences you had listening to sound.
One certainly transformative experience while listening was when I went to the World Trade Organization protests in Seattle on November 30th, 1999. And what I heard was tremendous. I heard what R. Murray Schafer calls a soniferous garden of sound. There were protester chants, there was drumming from the Infernal Noise Brigade, police announcements, an incredible, incredible and rich polyphony ricocheting through the canyons of our city streets that, to me, realized that they don't only do symphonies in Benaroya Hall, there's symphonies right out here in the street.
So you do a lot of recordings of, you know, people and human activity quite a bit, but you also do recordings in just interesting spaces. Can you talk about what attracted you to a space like Satsop? And actually, maybe you could first off remind us what that place is.
A Satsop actually is the shuttered nuclear power plant in Elma, Washington. There are two cooling towers there, one which is about 75% complete and the other which is an empty shell. So these cooling towers have fascinating acoustic signatures. There's a kind of very reflective, skittering echo that literally cycles and circles up the walls as you make sound inside the cooling tower. Nearby the cooling tower are a couple of tunnels, and lots of folks have been to the cooling tower and clapped their hands and made sound and performed, and I've done that with the Seattle Phonographers Union. But the tunnels, which are close by and actually connect to the reactor and deliver water to cool the reactor core, really haven't been explored too much, mainly because they've been covered up with dirt for a good many years, and only every now and again are they exposed. To me, once I started walking inside those tunnels, I heard two remarkable things. A remarkable hum that just seemed to build and build and build like a giant chord played by an orchestra. The second sound was this tremendous slapback echo. You would stumble or fall, which I did quite a bit of because it was wet and moist, and you would hear the echo return, not 1,000, 2,000, not 5 seconds, but sometimes 10, 15 seconds later, and it would come back to you as this chalky wash. That sounded nothing like the sound that you originally made, but you know that's actually the sound that you made, albeit delayed by, you know, 10, 15, 20 seconds.
So what was your concept for this recording? What was the story you were kind of hoping it would tell?
Well, when I went to explore the tunnel, actually, I had no idea that it would or could be an album of any kind. I simply wanted to go on a journey and listen. And ultimately, that's what a lot of my albums are, is that I want to use listening as a form of inquiry. What's here? Why are we hearing what we're hearing now? So one night, I drove down and decided, well, I'm going to go inside the tunnel. And I mounted tiny microphones that are about the size of a tooth, one on each side of my head, located a couple inches above my ear to try and duplicate or capture what my ears would hear. And I began walking into the gullet of the tunnel. No flashlight, just listening with my ears.
Why did you go in without a flashlight if you were, after all, just recording audio?
I'm very interested in echolocation, which is what bats do. I thought that if I walked very carefully and very quietly, and if I listened very attentively, I could echolocate my way through the tunnel and try and see the tunnel with my ears.
Some of these sounds really are very mysterious. I mean, some of them sound like the low-down track in a sci-fi movie. Some of them sound sort of vaguely industrial. Some of them sound alien. And it's just completely divorced from what... I don't know what any of those things are. What are they?
I can guess. The tunnel, which is a fairly long tube, I actually can't give you a length in feet or meters because I walked so slowly and I wasn't looking. But for me, I think what's fascinating is that the sounds are unknown. And this is where we get to imagine and we get to try and understand what things are. If you hear something poetic, mysterious, perhaps beautiful, and you're willing to go along for the ride, well, that's when I succeed as an artist, to try and lead you in unusual acoustic spaces. So certainly a lot of it is mysterious.
You went in without a flashlight. There's very little natural light in there. What did it look like to your eyes?
For the first 20 to 30 feet, there is starlight, there is moonlight, where you can see a little bit. You can see the outline of the tunnel, which is about 12 feet wide, 12 feet in diameter, I should say. And my first time in the tunnel, I noticed a pool of water ahead of me, and maybe it was about 10 feet ahead of me. And I thought, oh, well, I'm wearing pants and shirt and shoes that I don't care about, so I'll just kind of wade through and continue. And it turned out that this pool of water was actually a kind of catch, you know, like in a sink. Well, here in the tunnel, I found myself stepping into this pool, and I was moving very slowly, and I realized, oh, I'm actually sliding. And so I just kept sliding and sliding and sliding. And then I thought to myself, how deep could this thing be? It took me about, 20 to 30 seconds, I think, where I got all the way up to my chest. Now, I'm 6'4", and as I was sinking into this muddy water, I was able to hold my deck and hoist it aloft. So I'm holding my deck above the water. I'm up basically chest deep up to my chin. Gradually, slowly, I started just sloshing my way out.
So when you're recording in a place like that, an unused or derelict kind of space, or whether you're recording a demonstration or a protest, or whether you're recording some kind of experimental music, is there something you're after? Is there something you're searching for that you hope to capture someday?
When I make recordings, I'm looking for sounds that are alive. I want sounds that are worth hearing again, and I want sounds that are worth sharing with other people that folks might have missed, and that hopefully I can record them, capture them, and share them with people who want to hear interesting things.
Christopher DeLaurenti is a phonographer based in Seattle and also in Virginia. We have links to his work on our website, knkxsoundeffect.org. And that'll do it for our show this week. Sound Effect is produced by Kevin Kniestad and Jennifer Wing with Janae Janik. We had help this week from Matthew Stribe, Ed Ronco, Arwin Nix, Shane Mailing, Ali Ferguson, and Warren Langford. Come on back next week when our theme is The Hustle. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and this is 88.5 KNKX.